On the first corner this episode, we ask why the new breed of F1 drivers go out of their own way to self-deprecate. We discuss Lando Norris, Sergio Perez, and the Aston F1 drivers' prospects, all to come in the next 29 minutes. Was there any other performances that impressed you watching that race?
There was a very standout one, I think we all know, is Lando Norris. And it's funny, I remember with a conversation that the three of us had, we were like trying to rate, like, what level is Lando Norris on? And I suggested, this was maybe 2 years ago, when he was like popping up in some with some impressive qualifying performances, and I was saying, I see him sort of on the Daniel Ricciardo level. And the consensus seemed to be very cool on that, very icy. It was like, no, I think he's definitely not that level. And obviously, it's not a like-for-like comparison here, because Ricciardo hasn't had adequate time in the car yet. But, I mean, he left Ricciardo in the dust this weekend, and he was completely on it. And Norris, when he's on it, he is as fast as anyone. Like, I firmly believe that. I think he has like extreme flashes of speed. He's got this mega ability, but I don't think he has the same intensity that the top guys have, like the same absolute drive and will to win. And on top of that, I think there's this sort of happy-go-lucky thing about him. Kind of like Ricciardo, actually. It's quite a funny pairing they've got there. But I'm sure that makes him a great guy on an interpersonal level to work with and to be around. But I don't think it's very conducive to, if you have your sights set and actually winning a world championship. I hope I am selling him short. I hope in time he'll prove me wrong. But the way I almost categorize him is like a less erratic modern day Jean Alesi. You know, he's like, he's just brilliantly fast, but he's just not got that same DNA in him that Schumacher had, you know?
There is that sort of, like Lando Norris is in a fantastic position in a car that can regularly score podiums. He can now kind of build on, like, the McLaren, there's no question it's made a step forward even from last year. It's the only team that's probably not really lost much to the 2021 regulations. If anything, they seem to have stood still in terms of most cars are at least 1 second a lap, anywhere between 0.8 and a second a lap slower than last year, while McLaren seemed to be much, much closer to last year's performance simply because of the slower car, you know, from last year to this year. But yeah, like it's good for him. But that's the thing we've seen with Norris in the past, is that he would often start the season strongly with performances like that. And there's nothing can be escaped from the fact that I don't deny that Norris, I think last year, was a little unlucky in a lot of situations. He probably should have beaten Sainz over the course of the season, but there were definitely a lot of races where he was just missing, or Sainz was just simply, over the course of the season, stringing the results better together. I don't deny there was probably one or two instances where Norris was maybe a little unlucky with Spa and things like that. He should have scored highly there. I do tend to agree with you. It remains to be seen if Norris can put them podiums in, week out. And the fact that he very nearly got on the front row, I just remember, I've never been so excited watching a qualifying session and just seeing a shot of an onboard McLaren and seeing two purple sectors underneath his name. In the dying minutes of qualifying, I just remember just sitting there wide-eyed. Is he going to get pole position? Because I was throughout the weekend, we were always going, you know, the way when we watch the practice sessions, we watch the qualifying sessions, and the track always ramps up, and sometimes it can get slower as well. You know, a bit of cloud cover towards the end of that session in Q3 in Imola, that probably just might have slightly dropped the temperatures a little bit for everyone. And depending on where you were on the track at that given time when the cloud cover hit, you could have done a grippy sector one. The sun disappears literally for, it's only half a degree. The track temperature might change, but that might be enough to give you more or less grip. So but that said, like I didn't think that the McLaren was capable of getting close to the Red Bull and the Mercedes at all. Again, I probably think, like what you were saying earlier about Hamilton and Verstappen, I think both probably underperformed and they're in qualifying. Like that nervousness of trying to outdo each other. Like Hamilton's best time was on his first run. He didn't better it on the second attempt. So when you've got McLaren's and you've got, say, Perez, etc., you know, they're within striking range of doing something when the pressure isn't on them. So definitely the drivers' performances, they matter a lot more than in previous years. So if you look at, say, last year, 2019 and 2020, there was such a big gap between the Red Bull and the Merc and the rest of the field that if you did a scruffy lap in a Red Bull or a scruffy lap in a Merc, your worst starting position would be no lower than fourth place.
Year, it's a different beast altogether this year. Like it's like 2008, if you remember. If you drop the ball slightly in qualifying, you'd not even make it into Q3 sort of thing, you know, even in a top car. So
exactly. Yeah. It does matter now, like 2008, 2009, 2010, where when the field gap was quite close. That remains to be seen over the course of the year who can build on that and whether that will change for the rest of the circuits. I suppose the difference probably between in Bahrain and Imola, whereby it does seem that the Merc is as competitive. If anything, it looked more comfortable to drive than the Red Bull in dry conditions.
I think that seems to be the characteristic that Mark Hughes was talking about, that it's a more compliant car than the Red Bull. The Red Bull's just more, it's pointier in the slow speed stuff, which then makes it more nervous in the high speed stuff, which is ultimately faster in terms of potential, but harder to drive. And we've seen that reflected in the way, like even in the first two races, and even though one of them was wet, you could see Hamilton was able to live with Verstappen's pace in the race, in the first race, and then once he got his tires up to temperature in this race, it happened again. But lastly, just to touch on Norris, it was actually something I had been thinking as well. You mentioned it yourself, but that whole sort of new season excitement. That if you remember, he started very well last year, and then it kind of just faded away, just as the sort of novelty of the season sort of wore off and the season started dragging on. I'm like, 23 race season. I don't know. Maybe I'm giving an unfair sort of stereotype to the guy, but I see him almost as a sort of ADHD teenager who could get bored. I think that is actually fair. It's like maybe not overtly bored, but you know what I mean, like on a subconscious level he's just not quite as enthusiastic about the 20th race of the season as he is about the first two. The other thing I noticed about him was, and I've noticed this streak in a lot of the young drivers coming through, and interesting to know what you think about it, but like this excessive sort of self-deprecation and like...
That's something, absolutely. This weekend, it was full of it, wasn't it?
Like, I had to rewind and press play again. Like, did I hear that right? When he said, I let the whole team down because his car slid, 5 millimeters over a white line on an incredible qualifying lap. I mean, I think everyone understood, you know? And again, I don't want to read too much into that, but I don't think he really seemed like, I've committed a disaster, an atrocity. And I think Hamilton, like, he would sort of acknowledge it as a guy, I made a mistake there, but you could tell that he wasn't like blaming himself. Like, whereas with these guys, and I was thinking of Leclerc as well. He had a few moments, not this weekend, but just generally in the last couple of years, where if he makes a mistake, it's like he's in a race to put his hands up and say how sorry he was and how wrong he was and the mistake he made. And again, it's
beating,
that thing,
beating themselves up. Yeah, and that's like not even just Norris. I think Tsunoda was similar enough in about his own performance. And yeah, he stuffed it in the wall in qualifying, had a few spins in the race, and there is that thing, because it's funny, in the past, in the 90s, 2000s, if a driver ever made a mistake, they'd be so arrogant they'd never admit the mistake, or ever said, or even to the point, I wasn't even in the car at that time, that was someone else. Like, that used to be the mentality. It's like, you couldn't be seen to be admitting a weakness. And it's just changed with this sort of, as you say, this generation of drivers. And, you know, I often think that, you know, another man who sometimes comes out as hard on himself, sometimes Hamilton's a little bit like that. You'll see him on, you know, it's funny because, like, with, I think it was Bottas, he put an Instagram post showing him getting out of his wrecked car, and it just said, "Not my day today." And I just thought, you know, understatement of the century, not my day today. You know, it's like something you'd say at work if you made a little mistake. Oh, it's just not my day today. You know, after riding off the car at over 200 miles an hour or something. Oh, it's just not my day today.
Like when you drop the keys on the floor as you're locking up for the end of the day. Oh, it's just not my day today. but no, his car's completely totaled. Yeah, that's classic, typical sort of Finnish understatement, isn't it? But it's interesting. I don't know. I guess what I'm getting at with all that is that I see this lack of a sort of killer instinct, maybe, and definitely in Norris, and I just question it in Leclerc. I'm not just singling out those two guys. I think, as we've said, it's really a generational thing. I do see this inner steel as well with all of them, but definitely with Leclerc, that I think is at least a healthy counterbalance to that. But I don't know, there's just something that it doesn't sit well with me, the rush to apologize and, you know, suck up to the team. I don't think that's what the team would really want, you know. But a great start for Norris and Leclerc as well. I mean, Leclerc is just, he's pumping in those performances. He's leading Ferrari. He's doing a great job, you know. I guess that was the other point I was going to come to, was about Carlos Sainz. All these trends that we notice, and is it just me, or is he kind of a slow starter when it comes to just things generally? Like, wasn't he?
We talked about Norris's. Yeah, we talked about Norris's kind of fast starts. And in both 2019 and 2020, Sainz took, particularly 2019, Sainz took a good while to get a decent result in. 2019, I think Baku was his first decent result. Again, that was five, six races into the season. It looked like Norris comfortably had the measure of him, but he pulled it back. And similar enough to 2020, it was like that. He just pumped in those solid, you know, over the course of the season. There is that element of kind of slow starters blooming. And I can see that with the drivers who all struggled in Imola this weekend. Imola is just not a good track. If you don't know the car well, you know, you just can't. The margins are so punishing. But that's not the right way to say it. But the margins are so fine around Imola that you're pushing so hard, you need to have complete confidence in the car to be able to go right up to the entry point of the chicane of 160 mile an hour entry speed into Eye of the Needle, into the Gilles Villeneuve chicane before Tulsa. Like, for example, where Norris was actually purple over everyone on the whole lap was through that corner. Like, he was faster than Verstappen or Hamilton through that corner. And I watched it on board, and it's almost like he treats it as if it's not a corner. And to have that confidence in the car to do it, like, no other driver seemed to have it. Like, we were looking at, I was watching Alonso all weekend, just again, a driver, he just almost couldn't believe the car could do those speeds. And the risk of trying too hard and going wide is so great that definitely a risk v reward track like Imola brings that up with a lot of the drivers. The experienced wise heads would know, right, don't bin the car trying, just get it to the end and learn from it. And you could see that with Alonso, you could see that with Ricardo, who still finished, didn't he still finish fifth or sixth in the race anyway? Ricardo,
he did, but a disturbingly
large way off.
After the safety car, that was only what, 15, 20 laps. He finished it solid. I think it was like literally about 20 seconds behind Norris. Something was off there with him.
Yeah.
But I guess the other big one to talk about is Perez. And it's funny, it was almost like this weekend was like a blast from the past for Perez. And what it reminded me of was 2013. And it was like, oh yeah, he didn't succeed at McLaren. And I think we could be seeing the same thing happen over again, because I suspect that Perez is kind of, as we know, his style is like a crafty driver. You don't look at him and think he is wringing every last tenth out of that car. But you might think, well, is he getting the most out of a given situation, like a fluid dynamic race situation where strategy is at play or there's changeable conditions? He tends to come out on top. You know, I know there's a bit of a trope to that, and certainly Jenson Button got a lot of that sort of mythology assigned to him. But I think it, although it's a cliche, there's a lot of truth in it, and that applies to Perez as well. But what I mean with that is that it's being a sort of crafty driver. You sort of, it's like you're winning, or you're getting the glory through the back door. You know, you're not expected to be leading from the front and winning from the front with all eyes on you. He seems to, like, I don't know, get results when his back's against the wall and when people aren't expecting it of him. He just pops up. And I don't know. I think this year it's like the spotlight's on him and it's unavoidable. And it's like Brundle says, you're either in F1, you're either giving pressure or you're taking it. You're receiving it, and I think he's very much on the receiving end of it right now. It's kind of the way I see it. I mean, he made, I think, more mistakes in that race than probably he did in the entirety of 2020. I'm not mistaken, you know.
There's something to be said about Perez for that as well, in that, you know, he's on. Jenson Button has gone as far to say that on rear limited tracks, Perez is very fast, as in Bahrain, and he proved that again with his race pace in the last race and. Obviously, his win, you know, he very much made that win himself when he won that race. That's last year. That strength turns into a weakness on tracks where you need tire temperature. And particularly Imola, when you have wet conditions, like Perez is not known as a strong driver in the wet. If you look at, let's say, Turkey last year with Lance Stroll pulled something like 20 seconds on him in Istanbul at the start of the race. Stop over him, I think.
I remember that.
Bad timing or anything like that. It's only when the tires started to get a bit wary that Perez started to come into his own. And that very much was the case Imola was pretty much, you know, possibly the worst track that Perez could have had from a wet to dry condition thing where the track was not drying so quickly. So, yeah, I think that was just a bad example for Perez. The fact that he got the car onto the front row, you know, it seems like the only driver who was finally, it just all came together for him on that lap. He was the whole weekend trying to get on top of the Red Bull and getting the most out of it. And, you know, out-qualified Verstappen, the first time anyone's out-qualified Verstappen in a long time. So that's down to, and like that was kind of on pure performance too. You know, like fair enough, the conditions changed ever so marginally in that session. But, you know, I don't think anyone has done that since probably Ricciardo. I know Gasly did in Canada 2019, but that wasn't really a fair comparison, you know, due to the issues that Verstappen had. So I think, you know, Perez nailed it in that moment. And if he can get it onto the front row a bit more often, he might actually be in a strong enough place to be able to, you know, sandwich Mercedes into decisions like that, you know, making a hasty pit stop or whatever. You know, like that Red Bull have been missing the last few years is a second gunner. And, definitely, you can sense with Perez that there's probably a race win in him this year, you know, on merit. Like, if there's all it takes is for, you know, look at that incident at the first corner between Hamilton and Verstappen. That was pretty cool to watch. That was very much, you know, taken up from the whole team of this, you know, two Titans going at it.
Yeah.
And that could have ended in tears quite badly. And if it did, that would have been something like Perez would have been out in front. And even if he had struggled with the tire temperature, he's got no spray in front of him. It's just up to himself. So I think he could have easily been in a different position there. And he had that steer. He did have a steering wheel issue as well. Don't forget, he had his steering wheel was moving around on its slot, I think. So they had a steering wheel change when he got that 10-second penalty. So you know, I,
yeah,
struggle. Not probably not the most ideal race for Perez to demonstrate himself, I think.
Yeah, no, that's well explained. And in fairness, yeah, it's like I'd prefer that to be the truth rather than my slightly bleak dystopian view of his season to come.
Let's see. Yeah, there could be a flashpoint where he wants to seize the win for himself and he has to give it up to Verstappen, and he won't like that. This, like, I don't think Perez has ever given way for anyone ever.
Yeah.
Remember Esteban Ocon back at Force India days when they were coming together.
I like Perez a lot. I always have. Like, it's funny, like, you know, we tend to fall back on sort of almost racial stereotypes in a lot of these things with drivers. Like, it's not very PC to say, but, like, you know, with, like, the methodical Germans, the stoic Finns, the emotional Italians, all this sort of stuff. And, you know, when you think about, like, a Mexican driver, if you have to predict based on these sort of outdated racial stereotypes what he would race like, it would be more like Tsunoda, when actually he is like he's ice cool in terms of like just his approach to, yeah, his temperament. Yeah, I'm not saying like he never makes mistakes or he doesn't get rattled. I mean, that would contradict my whole point, but
see him emotionally going off on a rant, do you?
He's very mature, and again, it kind of, like I was saying with like Russell earlier, like you get the impression like he's just a competent person who would probably go far in life, you know, whatever he's doing. There's probably a bit of that with Perez. I see that sort of pragmatism in him, you know, like he recognizes he's not the absolute fastest driver, but he is damn fast when he puts it together. But he tries to maximize everything at his disposal. You know, whereas you get other guys who just, like Vettel, for example, who, when they can't be number one, when they realize that they're not actually Superman, it's like everything just falls to pieces, you know. Speaking of Vettel, there's part of me that I think he's actually quite happy to the sort of anonymity that his Aston Martin drive has got him this year, because again, it's like I think it was deeply humiliating for him to be driving a Ferrari as their previous like number one driver and just getting absolutely pummeled by this new upstart Leclerc. And again, it's like it's one thing getting beat by your teammate in the midfield if you're used to being beat by teammates, but it's like, I don't know, it, especially for Vettel, he's someone who's all the statistics and the, you know, his win ratio and the percentages and stuff, I know that means a lot to him, and it's all in tatters really, which started with Ricardo in 2014, sort of putting him to the sword that year, and he had a renaissance then when he had, like, you know, a sort of half asleep Kimi Raikkonen as his number two driver. But again, it's like when push came to shove, it all seemed to get them in 2018. And then when a really fast young upstarting driver was suddenly in the same stable as him, he just checks out. It's like fight or flight, you know. I look at Lewis Hamilton and he would always fight. That would motivate him more. That would extract more performance out of Hamilton. It seems like with Vettel, it's like it's his cue to leave the stage when someone comes along who might be faster than him. So I guess the point I'm making is that I think he's probably relieved in a sense to be just in the midfield and just not to have the spotlight on him. He could almost do with people just forgetting about him for a while, you know?
Yeah, but like as the problem is that he's a former world champion and he has that badge on him of being a 4-time world champion. And you can see with the Sky Sports advertisements, when Aston Martin are advertising a car, it's Vettel talking about his 4 titles and he's in an Aston, you know? So it's like, it seems like sponsorship washed up sort of, which is probably not a nice term to use for him, but that's how I see Vettel right now. Sadly, like the mistake he made in Bahrain was just, you know, he did a Vettel, you know, he's becoming more he's becoming known more now for his mistakes than he is for his performances, you know, his good performances that he did back in his time. So yeah. Like that's, and the fact that we're even saying back in his time is, that just tells you where Vettel's at. And the fact that Stroll in, you know, in wet conditions there, Stroll basically was quicker. Now Stroll does seem to be a half decent wet weather driver. We can't, you know, as much as I don't like Lance Stroll, but as much as I don't like the fella, he seems to be a decent Formula One driver. Again, a driver who, because of, you know, he gets a lot of stick from his background, and, you know, no driver got into F1 without millions of sponsorship, regardless of where it came from. But Stroll did seem to be in that position where he never had to fight to get into the next category. He had the backing to get into the next category. And that's kind of why I never really liked Lance Stroll. But he has his moment. He has a moment when he knows the wins are in his sails, and then he'll put in a good drive or a good performance.
Yeah, I
but then he's that kind of driver, though. He doesn't like if he's down at the back, you can never see him coming from behind and getting through the field. But
no, like yeah, he's a momentum driver. Like, you know, what if he's got a forward momentum? The wind just sort of carries him. But yeah. Well, we saw that like in Turkey last year, you know, when he was out in front, he was doing a good impression of Ayrton Senna, bizarrely, you know, for a portion of that race. And then when it started to go wrong, it really started to go wrong, you know. He's that sort of.
There's something in that, though. I think that, yeah, like if you join up the dots of Monza 2017, qualifying in Istanbul last year, this race in Imola, maybe a little bit, they're all on extremely low grip circumstances. Stroll actually does have something there, you know, that he a better feel for the limit of grip in like icy conditions, which is not really where Formula One cars are typically in. But
exactly, yeah.
Like Istanbul was quite an extreme example of that last year, where the temperatures barely got above 4 or 5 degrees. The track couldn't dry out. It stayed wet the entire race. You know, simply by the fact that there wasn't enough temperature in the atmosphere to evaporate the water. It was just so cold. So, in them
lower Stroll conditions.
Yeah, Stroll conditions. I think that's going to be a new term we're going to use now.
Yeah, it's basically when the track's at its absolute worst and most undrivable is when he's sort of, which is kind of, turns on its head the whole thing of the best drivers come to the fore in the worst conditions. Stroll is like, maybe he's the exception that proves the rule, but it's like the worst the conditions there are, it's like the monkey's off his back then, because he isn't expected to explore the limits of adhesion in the way that he's meant to be on a rubbered in dry track. It's like it's a really rubbishy track, well, it's kind of everyone's just sort of sliding around, so he can slide around with them just as effectively as they're sliding around, you know. There's definitely a bit of that with him. But no, in fairness, I don't want to say prove me wrong. It's not like, oh yeah, he's gonna win a world championship, but far from it. But I had him down as utterly incompetent at one point. And he's clearly not. That's not the case. So we have to give credit where credit's due. And no matter how badly Vettel's doing, to be outpacing Vettel coming from, like, you know, the daddy's little boy, Lance Stroll, who none of us rated. That fair play to him, you know. Credit where credit's due, I have to say.
Yeah, agreed.
Plus, his sister's really fit. Have you seen her?
Yeah, I've seen the Instagram pictures and stuff. And we leave it at that for this episode. Join us next time on the First Corner Podcast.